You know, I think the job that we have as teachers is to help students understand the political environment in which they live, what are the important current events, what more importantly are the important controversial issues. And I don't think that we can really have a democracy that's going to be sustained without that. So I think it's not just something that teachers should be allowed to do, but I think it's something that teachers should be required to do. I don't think we can have high quality civic education without current events and controversial issues.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Courageous Conversations About Our Schools. This is your host, Ken Fiedernick, and my guest today is Diana Hess, the person you just heard speaking about the role politics should play in the classroom. You'll learn more about her in a moment, but let me just say a few words about this interview before we get started. I recorded it back in 2021 for a special series we produced for another podcast I host called Teacher Stories, about what schools can do to help save our democracy. We're publishing it again here because, well, it's really a perfect fit for what this podcast is all about. As you just heard, Dr. Hess believes students should be talking about politics and controversial issues in the classroom, that our democracy depends on that happening. What's interesting, though, is that the idea Hess is promoting has itself become highly controversial. Since 2021, several states have passed what are called divisive concept laws, restricting what teachers can talk about with their students. Because many of these laws are quite vague, teachers in these states often avoid having discussions about anything that might be considered divisive, or as many of the laws state, topics that might make students feel discomfort or anguish. So not only is teaching about politics, controversial topics, and current events not a requirement for some teachers, it's unclear whether it's even allowed in some states. If Hess is right that this poses a threat to our democracy, then clearly this is something we all need to be having honest, courageous conversations about. Let's get back to my interview with Dr. Hess so you can learn more about her and her views on this subject. Dr. Hess is currently Dean of the School of Education at the University of Wisconsin at Madison, and she started her career as a social studies teacher in Downers Grove, Illinois, back in 1979. In 2015, she co-authored a book titled The Political Classroom, Ethics and Evidence in Democratic Education. And in 2009, she authored the book Controversy in the Classroom, The Democratic Power of Discussion. Welcome, Diana.
It's great to be here.
I thought I'd begin by asking her about where all this pushback is coming from. What would you say to a parent, maybe a conservative parent, that says, you know, you're just trying to get teachers to force their liberal ideas on my children?
I would say read my books, because that's not at all what I'm trying to do. My interest is not having students adopt the political views of their teachers. Keep in mind that teachers are not monolithic ideologically. You know, the most recent information that I saw indicated that, you know, about 40% of teachers consider themselves conservatives. So the notion that, you know, every teacher in America has one set of political views and they're trying to force them down the throat of their students is just empirically false.
You know, when you conducted your multi-year study and published your book in 2015, you wrote the political climate was becoming increasingly divisive, polarized, and vitriolic. And you go on to say that polarization threatens the very project of democratic education. You wrote that well before the era of Trump. So the level of polarization and divisiveness has escalated in a huge way. I wonder if you hold out much hope that schools can protect our democracy in today's political climate? And is democratic education doomed? And if not, what needs to happen?
I don't think democratic education is doomed. I think what needs to happen is really high quality civic education in all schools, public and private, in the United States. And I think if that doesn't happen, we're not going to prepare young people to participate. And I think one of the challenges is that the more polarized we become, the harder it is for people to participate wisely and well. And I do think schools have a role to play in working to combat that. That being said, the schools of America did not cause political polarization, so the schools should not be expected to be the savior. I think that there's a lot that needs to happen to depolarize the American political system. And, you know, I always worry when I hear people saying, well, the only thing that can happen is if we teach, you know, kids differently in the schools. I think schools can make a big difference. We know this, you know, from decades and decades of research. But notwithstanding the fact that I think schools are really powerful and have a huge impact on this society, we should be really wary of saying that, you know, these big problems that have been created by multiple factors and forces need to be solved by the schools.
You know, I think what people worry about, as I just alluded to, is that teachers would use their classrooms as political soapboxes. And in your book, you cite a study that was done some years ago that 50% of the people surveyed in America, I guess, of just general population, believe that's true. But in your research you conducted for your book, that you cite in your book, you really found something different, that teachers don't by and large do that. Isn't that right?
Right. And I don't think it's just my research. I think there's a lot of research that's shown that. Now, I don't want to suggest that there aren't some teachers who, when they're teaching students about politics and about controversial political issues, may not be providing as much of a balance as they need to. But I think generally what we know from a lot of empirical evidence is that teachers who are doing this, their goal is not to have students adopt their perspective. That is not why people go into teaching. You know, if people wanted to have people adopt their perspective, they'd go into politics, right? Or they would go into some form of activism. When people go into teaching, they tend to say things like this: I really want to make sure that my students understand what's happening and that my students know enough to form their own views on the political issues of the day. It is relatively unheard of to have a teacher say, I want, you know, my students to have my own views. It's not out of the question. I remember a number of years ago, I used to co-teach the Supreme Court Summer Institute with Lee Arbitman from Street Law. It was a wonderful professional development program for high school social studies teachers that was taught in DC in collaboration with the Supreme Court Historical Society. And I had a teacher come up to me who was from Texas, and she had a lot of very patriotic clothing on. And she said, in my classroom, I have a big poster of the president, George Bush, and I want to make sure that all the students in my classroom support the president. And I said, well, what do you mean support the president because, you know, in the office, or do you mean support the politics, the views, the president's doing? She said, no, I want them to know that if George Bush says it's true, it's true. And she was, you know, very adamant about it. And she said, what do you think about that? And I said, if I were your principal, I would fire you. I don't think about that. I don't think that's appropriate. I do not think that's what teachers should be doing.
There are actually laws in most states that prohibit teachers from promoting their own political agendas in their classroom, right?
I think there are some laws in some states that touch on that. You know, more likely there's school district policies that talk about, you know, if teachers are going to include controversial issues in their classroom, what do they need to think about doing and not doing? And some of those policies are just kind of absurd on their face. Other policies, I think, are more helpful. What we do know is that there have been, you know, lots of bills that have been deliberated and some have passed in some state legislatures that seek to control what teachers are saying when they're teaching history or when they're teaching contemporary politics.
Well, let me ask you about some other developments happening around the country on this same issue. Several states have are in the process of enacting laws that restrict what teachers can discuss with their students. In Texas, for example, a new law that went into effect says, among other things, that a teacher who chooses to discuss a controversial topic or a current event shall, to the best of the teacher's ability, strive to explore the topic from diverse and contending perspectives without giving deference to any one perspective. And I should add to that, that right prior to that language I just read, they actually say that a teacher can't be required to talk about current events. And you earlier said that you think current events should be required. And I suspect there are state curriculums around the country that mention current events as being part of the required curriculum, and they talk about how you do it. So here in Texas, say if a teacher chooses to do it, they have to do it by getting both sides. And I think what that means is that if a teacher were discussing, say, the January 6th insurrection as an important current event, he or she would have to invite someone in or find something online that supported the insurrection and the efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election. I wonder if that's how you interpret the Texas law, and whether you think that's a bad thing or a good thing.
That's not how I interpret the law. So, you know, I want to make a distinction between current events and controversial issues. You know, a current event is simply something that's happening. You know, a current event is, it may have some elements of controversy attached to it, but it's not by definition a controversial issue. And there are all sorts of events that happen that are so important that students should learn about them in school. And sometimes those events, you know, obviously are not planned. And, you know, good teachers have to make decisions all the time about, you know, is a particular event so important that we need to stop what we were going to do and make sure that students understand it. You know, I did a lot of research on curriculum and teaching about 9/11 and its aftermath. And I know that, you know, teachers, the day of 9/11 and for weeks afterwards, you know, many of them stopped their regular curriculum so they could help students understand what was happening. And as you may recall, it was incredibly difficult. It really took us a long time to have an understanding of all sorts of questions and answers to those questions related to 9/11. So I think it's important to make that distinction. Controversial issues, on the other hand, are questions for which there are multiple and competing answers, and are questions that we really want people to deliberate and we want people to make decisions about. And I do think that teachers who are teaching civic education especially should not be given the option of teaching about current events or controversial issues. We know that the standards for what constitutes high quality civic education include 6 very specific things that need to be done. These are things that are in the civic mission of the schools, now a 20-year-old document that was created by organizations across the political spectrum, had very widespread and broad support. And one of the 6 things is students should learn about controversial issues and current events. So I don't think you can be a good civics teacher without doing that. So if I were a Texas legislator, I certainly wouldn't want to put that in law, that giving teachers the option of doing that. It would be like saying to a teacher who's teaching algebra, we know a lot about how to teach algebra really well, and we're going to ban you from doing that. You know, it's absurd on its face. Now, to your example about the events of January 6th, you know, I think initially when teachers were teaching about that, they were teaching about that as a current event, trying to understand what was happening. And I think that's really appropriate. I think the question about whether or not, you know, well, A, was that an insurrection or not? And if it was an insurrection, you know, how should we think about that? I do think that there's a lot of controversy around that. Whether or not that's a classic controversial issue, you know, is itself a matter of some debate. You know, I think the biggest problem in this domain is how to figure out What's a question for which there are multiple and competing answers that we want people to deliberate versus what's a question for which there's a right answer that we want students to learn and believe? So for example, when I taught about women's suffrage, I wanted my students to come out of that believing that it's a good thing for women to have the right to vote. I did not teach that as a controversial political issue. So I think that for teachers, you know, this is really a challenge. And it's especially a challenge with contemporary issues.
Well, let's talk about the fairly widely held belief that the 2020 presidential election was stolen. And there's virtually no evidence that that in fact was the case. And yet many people believe, and I have to believe, some students, a fairly large number of students, come into class and hold that belief. So if you were teaching civics and talking about the election, someone said, well, I think it was stolen. Do you say, well, we're going to dismiss that because there's no evidence? Or do you open it up and encourage people to bring in evidence to support that belief or something in between?
Yeah, it's an excellent question and a very difficult one. So I think we've got very strong empirical evidence to suggest that the 2020 election was not stolen. In the same way, we have very, very strong empirical evidence to suggest that climate change is caused by human behavior. I think when we have very strong empirical evidence to suggest that we have a right answer to a question, for teachers to believe that we don't is lying to kids. And, you know, we don't have anything that is specifically like the Hippocratic Oath in medicine, in education. But if we did, and I were writing it, I would say, above all else, do not lie to students.
It becomes a pedagogical question for a teacher on what to do when you have people coming in saying, I think it's a hoax, or like my parents, or like what I hear on the news channel I listen to, I think the election was stolen. Now, one choice is to say, we're not going to entertain that. Just as you said, we're not going to entertain the idea that women shouldn't have the right to vote. That's not a controversy that we're going to, it's not a controversy, so we're not going to. But if you have people that believe it, I wonder if more harm is done than good by dismissing it and say, we're just going to move on.
Right.
Or do you say, I hear what you're saying, and I know lots of people believe that the election was stolen. And what I want to urge you to do is to come back and make a presentation that supports it with evidence so that you maintain a relationship with the student. You don't further alienate them and say, well, I went to school, my teacher told me that I was wrong and we're not going to talk about it. And it might just embolden students like that.
Yeah, absolutely. As you're suggesting, I mean, these are hard pedagogical choices that people have to make. And I've seen really good teachers deal with these choices or make different choices with respect to this problem. You know, I've seen teachers have students talk about, you know, why do you believe that? Or why do people more broadly believe that? I've seen teachers do what you're suggesting, which is to imagine that this was a genuine controversy and treat it that way. I think it's the concern I have is that when we're in a society that's rife with conspiracy theories, I think there's a question about, do schools have a special role to play in combating conspiracy theories? And that's a question that I think about a lot. And there are, you know, other people who are thinking about this as well. It's certainly not something that's unique to me. And I do worry about, you know, how a democracy can govern itself when you've got, you know, lots of people believing things that are empirically not true. I don't think this is a new problem. You know, I can't imagine a time in the history of this nation or other nations where you didn't have people believing things that were empirically not true. You know, it's in some ways the nature of the beast. And for that reason, I think, you know, most controversial issues need to be treated as open issues, you know, questions for which there are multiple and competing views. But I think there are some questions that we really do know, at least now, given the way science works. Of course, science is dynamic and things change, But, you know, I would never imagine, for example, wanting students to engage in the question of does smoking cause illness as an open question, because the scientific evidence on that is very, very solid.
So let me ask you a question that I've been pondering lately, and that is, do you worry at all that democracy itself or critical thinking or the idea that facts really do matter have all become partisan issues themselves? That, you know, one would think that most Americans would want schools to promote those things, but now I'm not so sure.
Yeah, that's a really excellent and well-framed question. Yeah, I do think what is the nature of truth is a partisan issue. I'm not sure how new that is. You know, I think what's new in the United States is the level of political polarization we have, and the fact that people who have the most extreme views are the most likely to participate. And you know, there's plenty of empirical evidence to suggest that that is what's happening. And I do think there is at some point where the level of political polarization becomes so high that it really does threaten democracy itself. I don't think we're there yet. And if I did, I wouldn't be doing what I do for a living. You know, I think most people who are in education for a living and like me have been in it, you know, for decades, you know, really believe in the relationship between democracy and education. But I do think we should be really worried about it. You know, the co-author of the book, The Political Classroom, Paula McAvoy, who's a professor at North Carolina State and just a fabulous thinker, one of the things that she did in response to the growing political polarization was to design curriculum to teach young people about political polarization, because she thought it was really, really important for people to understand, you know, what is this and what do we know about why it is growing and what does it look like? And I just thought that was brilliant. And there needs to be more of that.
As I think about what going forward, what we can do so that teachers who right now aren't feeling very safe, and in some states in particular, like Texas and Tennessee and Georgia, where these laws are being enacted saying that you can't do this, and if you do it, you have to do it this way, I guess the question is, what do we do to support teachers and to assure them that they can do the kinds of things that you're talking about? I think part of it is what administrators need to do, but administrators themselves are feeling pressure and they are fearful. So what do we do going forward, Diana?
I think we need to talk to the public and parents especially about why they should want their child to have high quality civic education and what the difference is between indoctrination and high quality civic education. And I think we really need to make that case frequently and robustly. And I do think we need to help school administrators and school board members understand what constitutes high quality civic education. You know, I have never seen a teacher who was really good at teaching controversial issues do it without the support of their administration. You know, we've got principals and assistant principals and curriculum coordinators all across this nation who are really supporting teachers in teaching about controversial issues in kind of two ways. One is making sure they have professional development so they know how to do this. It's not easy to do. And they need to really learn how to do it and keep learning how to do it. They need to have access to high quality curriculum. And then when they are doing what they should be doing, that principals and other administrators and school board members and parents need to have their back. You know, we can't on the one hand say, you know, we want a thriving democracy and then tie the hands of teachers who can help us get there.
You know, I agree with you, and there was that connecting with parents and conveying the message about why all parents, regardless of your political positions, should want high quality civics education. There was a teacher that I interviewed as part of one of these episodes from Florida that talked about the civic engagement work that she did with her students and getting politically involved and calling up civic leaders to address a problem that the students were concerned about. But the one thing the teacher did was she kept, as she always does, parents in the loop about exactly what they were doing and why they were doing it, and invited them to come in to watch a movie or a documentary she shows about how Americans through the years have organized themselves and stood up when they were being mistreated. And she invited parents to come and watch the movie with the kids. So I think it lowers the temperature that way when you're transparent and you're upfront with parents about the purposes of your lessons. And she said she gets virtually no resistance at all. And she teaches in a very conservative area of Florida. So I think that sort of is an example of what you're talking about.
Absolutely. You know, I think teachers need to be really transparent about what they're doing and why. And I think it's really important to communicate very clearly to parents. You know, one of the studies that I did quite some time ago that I reported in the book Controversy in the Classroom involved a class that had as its primary learning outcome improving students' abilities to talk about controversial political issues. And it was a semester-long class that was required to graduate. The only high school in America that I knew of at the time that required students to successfully complete such a course. It was a brilliant course. And one of the things they did was once a semester, they invited all the parents of all the students in to have their own discussions of the same issues the students were discussing. And it was so much fun. It was so interesting. What I liked about that was that that was like ultimate transparency. You know, the parents were experiencing the same thing that students were experiencing in the class. They read the same materials. The teachers did make them do the preparation, which was important. But it was, I really thought that was terrific. You know, very, very hard to scale that. So teachers don't need to do that in order to communicate successfully with parents. But they do need to communicate with parents. And I think when parents complain, teachers really need to listen carefully. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think good teachers do that. Good teachers recognize that parents have a lot to say and they need to listen to them. You know, on the other hand, we need to help parents understand why it's important to provide teachers with the professional respect that they deserve. So I think, you know, one of the biggest challenges we have in this country now is we simultaneously need teachers more than ever, and they need to be really terrific. And they're in a climate in which they're more likely to be attacked than they've been in the past. That's not going to work.
You know, what I'm getting from this conversation with you, Diana, where we started was, is it a good idea to have students talk about controversial issues and in the classroom in this highly divisive political climate? And you're saying yes. And I think what you're arguing is that if we do that and do it well, it actually could lower the temperature. It could actually lead to less division because people are coming together, at least in the classroom, and perhaps with even parents being involved and having them talk with one another rather than be speaking in echo chambers where they only hear themselves speaking to people who are like-minded.
Absolutely. You know, I really worry about the effect that social media is having on political polarization and political discourse. You know, we are living in filter bubbles, both of our own choosing often and ones that are being selected for us. You know, I've been following very closely the last couple of days the controversy about Facebook. And, you know, I think one of the problems we have is that it's very easy for us to be in a situation where we're constantly being reinforced that our views are right. And we know that when that happens, that is not a good thing. You know, democracies cannot thrive if everybody thinks everything they think is right all the time. You know, we have to be able to engage with people who have different points of view. And the one of the best findings we had of our longitudinal study that was in the political classroom, we followed students out after high school, 2 and then 4 years, is that when they were in classrooms where there were high quality discussions of controversial political issues, what the students learned is that they can disagree about a political issue and still have respect for people with differing points of view. And, you know, I can't imagine anything more important than that. It's just so easy to demonize difference, you know, as if, you know, what we want is everybody thinking the same thing. You know, that's the antithesis of democracy.
Yeah, I can't imagine in this day and age anything more than promoting the idea of civil discourse and learning, teaching kids learn to agree to disagree and how important that is. But you can only do that by putting the controversies out in front of people and having people listen and be open to the possibility that they may change their view in light of it. Or if they don't change their view, they can at least agree to disagree. What more important thing could we be promoting than that? And what better place to do it than our public schools?
Yeah, I obviously agree. And one of the reasons I believe this is possible is because I see it happening all the time. Hmm. You know, I know I can point teachers that I've worked with all over the country who really know how to do this well, who are doing it successfully, even in this time of, you know, incredible political polarization. But let me say that those same teachers will say it's harder now than it's ever been. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many conversations I've had with my former students, people who were in my class 20 years ago learning how to be social studies teachers and are now, you know, they've had two decades of teaching behind them. And they will say to me, boy, it's more difficult now than it used to be. But they also will say it's more necessary than it's ever been.
I think on that note, I want to thank you, Diana, for being part of Courageous Conversations about our schools and for helping us think about what high-quality civics education looks like and why it's so important, especially now in these polarized times. You can find this and all of our episodes at schoolconversations.org and on your favorite podcasting platforms. So long, everyone.